minutes, but just wanted to mention something that Tineke mentioned again, which is the movie night this Friday. We've got these flyers out there, which are great. They're out on the table in the commons area. They're great invites if you want to hand that off to somebody. And also, if you wouldn't mind just grabbing maybe three or four and putting them up in your local supermarket or Starbucks or something like that. Obviously, ask permission first, but everybody I've asked so far is perfectly okay with that. We just wanted to let people know about it. It's been promoted by Burtonsville Day as well, because it's part of those the Burtonsville Day celebrations. But we just wanted to make sure we get the word out to people that there's a free movie night, because people we've spoken to already are pretty excited about coming on to an outdoor movie. I guess it's not so usual these days. Also wanted to mention we have outside the discipleship series material for the series that begins today. It's called Sacred Pathways. It's all about different ways of experiencing God. So if you don't have a copy of that yet, please do pick it up outside. You can also download that online. Go to our website and check that out, and you'll see it there as well. So today we're beginning that series. And the subject matter for this first week is experiencing God through our senses. And, you know, we are sensual beings, right? And even that word sensual kind of has, I think, sort of seedy connotations to it, really. You know, if we said we're going to have a very sensual service today, which we are, by the way, you may not have showed up. I don't know. Or maybe you would have done. Oh, great. But, you know, there's this thing about senses, our senses, our experience of reality through taste, touch, sight, hearing, through smell. There's something about that that's very everyday, very normal. We're all experiencing life that way. I mean, that's how we perceive one another. It's how we perceive the universe around us. And yet there's also, I think, especially within spiritual circles or religious circles, perhaps within Christian circles, there's this suspicion of those things. Like, we may be suspicious about feelings, about emotions. Depends what tradition you grew up in, your family tradition or your church tradition. That may affect how you feel about those things now. But I know for me, certainly in my church tradition, I was taught not to rely on feelings. You know, feelings are bad, and rely on facts. And I had to learn all these facts about what faith was about. When, in fact, what I really wanted to do, I wanted to feel God. I wanted to feel that God loves me. Don't just want to know that. Wanted to experience it for real. But I think some degree of suspicion about feelings has crept into the church over the years. I mean, we haven't really got time to trace that, but you could look, for instance, at the Protestant Reformation. I mean, there was a lot of good that came out of that, but some things got lost that weren't so good. So normal worship services in churches prior to that time were very sensual. They're all about smelling things and hearing things and feeling things. And that really helped people connect with God. The Protestant Reformation made it a little bit more intellectual. It was all about reading the Bible and believing certain truths, you know, which is also very good. But a little bit of the feeling got lost, I think. Also, you think of movements like Puritanism that kind of downplayed our feelings because actually they get us into trouble, right? You know, our senses, our emotions, our sensuality as human beings can get us into trouble. And I mean, it's got me into trouble before. Has it ever got anybody else into trouble? Have you ended up ever doing things that you think that probably wasn't the best of things to do, but it seemed like a good idea at the time because your feelings were telling you to do it, right? So that's all very true, but and yet perhaps those things, rather than getting us into trouble, can actually lead us to God. Maybe God is even trying to communicate with us through those means. And if we shut them down or we mistrust them, we may be missing out big time. Let me give you a little example of this. Around about 20 years ago, a long time ago, I was in the north of France, the northeast part of France, an area called Epernay, which is, or the town of Epernay, which is in the Champagne region of France. You can probably tell what I was doing there, right? Yeah, so I was tasting the champagne. That's what, you know, that's the reason I went with my wife, went up to the Champagne region. But while it was just after Easter, and I was walking through the town, and I noticed in a store they had all these fish and bread laid out. And it was kind of an unusual combination. It was this fish and bread, and I was like, what's that? But it kind of, I don't know why, but it stirred something in me. I just saw these things. So there's a visual stimulus. I saw it, didn't really quite know what it meant, but it sort of made me feel sad in some kind of way, and I couldn't really identify it. Walked on a little bit further, and there was another store with fish and bread, and actually some pictures of fish and bread. And some of those, and then every store I went by, or you know, every other store at least, had fish and bread in the window. And there was like some of the fish would be, you know, that Christian sign symbol for the fish, as opposed to a real fish or a real looking fish. But either way, wherever you went, there was fish and bread. And after a while, I began to think, hang on a minute, this is something to do with Easter. And I remembered this story, which comes right at the end of John's account of Jesus' life, John's gospel. In the very last chapter, chapter 21, there's kind of like an epilogue there. And we've read it many times here, and you may be familiar with it, but I wasn't so familiar with it back then, but it kind of reminded me of the fact that Jesus cooked breakfast on the beach for his disciples, his followers, with fish and bread. He cooked fish and bread. And what happened was, he'd come back to life, but his disciples had let him down badly. They'd all deserted him. Peter especially had deserted him. And Peter had, you can read this in the account, and we're not going to read it completely today, but Peter was kind of down. He'd gone back to fishing. A lot of them had gone back to fishing. It's like they'd gone back to their everyday career. They weren't, in one sense, now followers of Jesus. They'd kind of felt like they'd blown it. And they're fishing, and they caught nothing, and there's this guy on the beach who they don't immediately recognize, and he tells them to cast their net on the other side, and there's a repeat miracle, another miracle in which they catch loads of fish, and they suddenly realize, oh my gosh, it's Jesus. And Peter, who has denied Jesus three times, who's kind of totally blown it, takes off his outer coat, and he dives in, and he swims to the shore, and you're expecting this sort of wonderful reunion of Jesus and Peter, but Peter kind of stops and stands back because he realizes, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to say? I've completely blown it. I mean, I let Jesus down. I sold him out at his darkest moment. And on the beach, Jesus is cooking on a fire. And the word John uses for that fire is a word that he only uses once before in the whole of his account. And it's the same word he uses for fire, for the fire that's in the courtyard where Peter denies Jesus. So there's, you can almost smell the fire. It's very evocative, and there's the fish there. You can perhaps smell the fish and even taste the fish, and there's this warm, fresh bread. It's a very sensual story. And the story goes on where Jesus forgives Peter. Jesus reconciles with Peter, and it's a beautiful story of reconciliation and forgiveness. Now, I went back to my hotel room and read that story because I wasn't so familiar with it at the time, and I needed to read it again because I had completely blown a whole bunch of things in my life. I had really messed up. I had done some terrible things. And I had kind of got through those things, but I was feeling under the weight of the burden of what you've done. Has anybody ever felt that before? Where you've done stuff, and it's like, you know, you've been forgiven, you know you're forgiven, you've asked for forgiveness from the appropriate people, but you can't believe that you could do those kind of things. And you're sort of weighed down under that guilt. And I was just walking around like that. So when I went home, having had just something simple like fish and bread evoke this response in me, because I knew that somehow in this fish and bread was forgiveness. I mean, what the heck have fish and bread got to do with forgiveness? But somehow it evoked that. There's this sensation, this feeling that it evoked. And I went to the hotel room, read that story, and I just fell on the floor. And I was with my wife, and I think she was a little taken aback. And I just cried and cried and cried because I felt forgiveness. That story somehow became my story. I felt the power of that forgiveness. It was like I felt it in my body. It was emotional. It was intense. And that was a beautiful moment. And I accessed that. I connected with that through a feeling, through an emotion, through a connection with a symbol, a visual stimulus that helped me in an incredible way connect with God. And it made me wonder, if God can speak through fish and bread in a window, maybe God's communicating with us way more than we could imagine. Maybe this is a case of, you know, like in those stories where some you have estranged lovers and one of them is writing letters and somehow the letters go missing or somebody devious takes them and hides them. Anybody watch Downton Abbey? Anybody? Oh, there's some cheers for Downton Abbey. You remember I think it's the second season where Anna and Bates were separated because he's in jail. Sorry to give the plot away to anybody who didn't know about it. But and he writes to her. But she doesn't get the letters because they're intercepted. And she thinks he's forgotten about her. She thinks he doesn't love her anymore. And then suddenly the letters get released. and she gets all these letters, and there's this sense of relief, and it's a beautiful moment. Well, maybe it's a little bit like that with God. Perhaps one of the reasons, because you know we've been talking over the last few weeks about the fact that we find it hard to feel God, we find it hard to experience God. Maybe one of the reasons is because God really is communicating with us way more, but we're just a bit shut down. Now, that's not to blame ourselves, but perhaps for fear of our feelings, maybe because our feelings have got us into trouble in the past, we're kind of suspicious of them, but if we could engage in them in healthy ways, we might experience a lot more of God. And we're actually going to, that we get into that in the material that I was talking about this week, and there's some exercises. There's going to be, at the end of each chapter, there are a choice of three exercises. Just pick one that you can do during the week to which, in this instance, will lead you into an opportunity to experience, to feel more of God through your senses. But we're going to do that today. We're going to experience God through lots of activities. So I'm going to stop talking in a moment, and we're going to actually have an opportunity to engage with God through smell, through touch. We're going to smell God today. We're going to perhaps touch God or feel God's touch. We're going to hear God. We're going to see God in certain things. And we're going to taste God. We're actually going to taste God this morning. Now, just as a little bit of, I suppose, introduction to that, let's look at a scripture in the Psalms. And the Psalms are full of evocative language about feeling. But here's one from Psalm 34. Open your mouth and taste. Open your eyes and see how good God is. Blessed are you who run to him. So we're going to run to God this morning. I mean, we're going to run, like Peter jumped out of that boat and ran ashore to Jesus. We're going to run to God, and we're going to use taste and vision and a whole bunch of other senses as the Hebrew Scriptures talk about. Here's another one in the Psalms. This is from Psalm 63, a psalm of David. He's in the desert where it's very dry, and he's very thirsty, no doubt, in the desert. He says, "Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with the richest of foods. With singing lips, my mouth will praise you. On my bed, I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me." Lots of expression there of what he wants to taste, or you know, choices of food. He wants drink. There's the tactile stimuli of being under the shadow of God's wing, of feeling that protection, of feeling that love close. The Hebrew Scriptures are full of very emotional expressions towards God and full of emotional responses from God, where God connects with us through our feelings, through our emotions. The Christian Scriptures tell a similar tale. So we're going to this morning just very briefly think about John again. We just talked about a story from the end of John's Gospel, John's account about Jesus' life. He also wrote some letters to the early church, a couple of thousand years ago, letters to try and encourage the earliest followers of Jesus. And in the first chapter of the first letter he wrote, it says this: "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared. We have seen it and testified to it, and we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We write this to make our joy complete." In other words, John is saying, look, I have fellowship with Jesus. I have fellowship with God the Father because I've seen and heard and touched and smelt. I mean, he doesn't actually say smelt, but you get the drift. He's saying, this is real. I mean, our senses make things real to us. He's talking about something that's alive to him because he's seen and heard and felt and touched it. And that, I think that's really important. It's also, I think, really important, and we're going to look at a couple of passages from John's gospel here, that Jesus came as a full human being with his senses fully engaged. Like we, I think, can sometimes kind of remove our bodies, our emotions, our feelings, remove this carcass, if you like, from our spiritual experience, from our even from our spirituality. Jesus came in the flesh. Look what it says right at the beginning of John's gospel now. So we're in the gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So that's all sort of esoterical, abstract. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. But then that abstract suddenly becomes very concrete. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. So Jesus was the embodiment of full divinity in humanity. He felt, he touched, he saw, he heard, he tasted stuff. Jesus had his whole body engaged in this connection to the Father, and he calls us to do a very similar thing. And we can trace Jesus throughout John's gospel as a very sensual being. Jesus, for instance, in John chapter 2, the first miracle that Jesus works, he doesn't heal a leper first in John's gospel. He doesn't make the blind see in John's gospel. Anybody know what the first miracle in John's gospel is? Jesus turns water into wine because they're at a wedding. He and his family are at a wedding, and they've run out of wine. And like, you know, if Jesus has got only so many miracles to dole out in his lifetime, you'd think that that wouldn't come very high on the list. I don't think he did only have a certain number. But Jesus takes some water because the wedding party have run out of wine, and he turns it into wine. This is what it says about the wine. He told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. So he's done whatever he's done, and this water's now become wine, and they're taking it to the master of the banquet to taste the wine. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn it knew, who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choicest wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now. So this wasn't just any old wine. This was top-notch wine that Jesus produced. It seems that Jesus enjoyed that miracle. He wasn't just saying, well, here's a little bit, but go careful now. You don't want you getting tipsy or anything. I mean, in fact, it seems like their practice was bring out the cheap stuff when everybody's already drunk a little bit and they won't notice the difference. And Jesus is turning the tables on that. He's saying, no, let's save the best till last. And he's giving them incredibly good wine. He's doing that because he loves us. He's saying, you are the beloved. You are beautiful. And he's giving that as a gift from God. And that's the first miracle that is recorded in John's gospel. Now, throughout the gospel, we hear all these sensual tales about Jesus. Again, I think when we use that word sensual, it has these sort of negative connotations. But let's call them tales of Jesus being fully engaged with his senses. He talks about, in John chapter 6, he talks about hunger. He feeds 5,000 people. They eat bread. They taste it. He talks in John chapter 7 about thirst and come to me, all who are thirsty, and rivers of living water will flow out of you. In John chapter 11, the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept when he weeps because his friend Lazarus has died. He's emotionally engaged. And there's some interpreters would say, well, he's not weeping about Lazarus. He's weeping about the lack of faith in the people around him. Maybe, but either way, Jesus is emotional. And I think Jesus was emotional about the loss of a friend of his, a good friend of his, who he brings back to life, incidentally. And then in John chapter 12, we read a beautiful story of Jesus being anointed by Mary, the sister of Martha, with very expensive perfume. And it's a kind of a sensual moment where she washes his feet with her hair, and this really expensive perfume is a measure of her love for Jesus. And then in John chapter 13, Jesus washes his disciples' feet and touches them. And there's this intimate connection, which is really very, very sensual and somewhat uncomfortable for the disciples. They don't really know what to make of it, Jesus washing their feet. I mean, it was customary to have your feet washed back in those days, but even for them, it was somewhat uncomfortable. And then we read about Jesus' death, Jesus' resurrection. Even in the resurrection tale, we have Thomas, who's become known as Doubting Thomas, who it says he has to see Jesus and feel Jesus and puts his fingers even into the wounds that were in Jesus' body because he needs that. And then right at the end of John, we have this beautiful tale that I was telling you of the disciples being, really all of them being reconciled with Jesus, but especially Peter being reconciled with Jesus through Jesus cooking them breakfast on the beach. They spend a moment with Jesus where they eat together, they taste, they engage in a very intimate way. That's their reconciliation. That's how Peter is reconciled back to God. Now, we this morning, as I mentioned, are going to have an opportunity to experience a number of different sensations which are opportunities for us to connect with God. And there's no guarantees about what's going to happen, all right? But I do want to encourage you to allow your senses to be woken up through these different exercises. Nobody has to do anything, okay? So it's totally okay. We'll be playing some music through this time, but we're going to spend 15 to 20 minutes or so going through these exercises. You could do nothing and just sit, and that's perfectly okay. In fact, one of the things you could do if you'd rather do that, you could sit and engage your auditory sense. You could just listen. Listen to what's going on around you. Listen to the music as it's being played. And ask yourself, what is God saying to me in this? How does it make me feel? What emotions is it arousing in me? Am I feeling comfortable or uncomfortable at the moment? But that's what you can do through hearing. And then we'll have another opportunity to engage with hearing during our worship time where we're going to sing songs together after these various exercises we're going to do. But the gist of these exercises is what I just explained with if you would prefer to just sit and listen. We want to open ourselves up to God's presence. So many of them have some instructions with them, not all of them, but I'm going to talk us through each one. Some of them will have a piece of paper, like on here, for instance, there's a piece of paper, and it just explains what this exercise is all about. I'll go through that in a second. Many of the other ones, likewise. And you can take that piece of paper, read it through, but they all really begin with saying, just kind of center yourself, maybe close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, and be present in this moment, and invite God to speak to you. I encourage you just to not worry about emotions. Right, some of these things might stir up emotion in us. Let that go. There may be some tears. There may be some laughter. It's okay. It's really okay. I mean, I know this is Washington, D.C., but it really is okay. All right? We can let our feelings come to the surface and be real about those feelings. Okay, I'm going to start us off here in the middle, okay, because they're not in any particular order. So I'm sorry if you have to turn around for this. But here we have a tasting station, okay? And what we're going to do is taste forgiveness. We have, this looks like a communion tray. It's not. It's got, that's not vodka, by the way. That is vinegar, okay, just to make you aware. We have vinegar here, okay? And the idea here is that you'll take the little cup of vinegar. And there's instructions here with it, okay? But take a sip, and just a little sip. Don't chug the vinegar, okay? Because we'll have other kind of experiences happening. So just take a sip. And the object is to take three sips. So you're going to take a sip. And on the first sip, let the bitterness of the vinegar lead you to where is there bitterness in your life, okay? As you taste this vinegar, as it spreads around your mouth, as you swallow it, and as it creates this bitterness, where is there bitterness in our lives? To what degree is there bitterness towards somebody else? Maybe there's somebody we haven't forgiven. And let that feeling come forward. Now, it may be that's really easy, but it might be very obvious, but it may take a bit of time, and that's why we're going to just linger on this. Don't evaluate your feelings. Like if something comes up, oh, I haven't forgiven that person. All you're doing is saying, I haven't forgiven that person. You're not going to judge yourself. This isn't an experiment in feeling bad, all right? So, but just identify it. And then take another sip and identify, is there something I haven't forgiven in myself? Is there bitterness towards myself, an area where I haven't forgiven myself? And then another sip, and is there any bitterness towards God? Do I feel a sense of being let down by God? Am I angry at God? And again, don't evaluate it, don't judge it, just be honest and let that be there. Then on this side, just come round to this side, and we have three cups of honey. Some of this honey is Cedar Ridge honey, not all of it, but some of it is Cedar Ridge honey, and some spoons. And what we're going to do is take a spoonful of honey and put that in our mouths and let this do the same thing with the honey, just one teaspoon though. No double dipping, okay? That's really important. Otherwise, we'll be in trouble. And then there's a little recycling container here. Just drop the spoon in there. We'll recycle those later. But take a spoonful of honey, and I'm going to take a little piece here. Notice I didn't do the vinegar. I'll do that later. That's good honey. And let it coat your mouth. Wow, that's really good. Let it coat your mouth, and you will feel the sweetness of the honey. There's an intense sweetness with this honey. Let it melt away that bitterness. And as that happens, forgive that person, or forgive yourself, or just accept God's love. Accept that God is here and loves us. Okay, so there's some instructions there. I'm not going to spend quite so much time on all the others, but let me just walk around some of these. So over here, this is a seeing God exercise. So there are pieces of art that people in our community have put up very kindly. Look deeply. There's some instructions. So I encourage you to read the instructions, which are over here. Just a little piece of paper. And you can read these through and maybe just put them back, or you can take them with you. But just stand at one of these pictures and look. And look deeply. What do you see? How does it make you feel? What's familiar? What's unfamiliar? What emotions does it stir up? What does it remind you of? And then what is God saying to you, if anything? What is God's presence in this, if there's anything to perceive there at all? On this side of the room, we have a similar exercise. There's some more pictures. And then also the same exercise with mirrors, okay? So we can look at ourselves and go through the same thing. I mean, that's our own image is a very familiar image, but can also be very uncomfortable, right? And some instructions with that, to look deeply at ourselves and how does that make us feel? What do we notice about ourselves? Over here we have smell, okay? So there's a variety of intense smells. And you might actually, as you walk past there, you can smell the vinegar, right? You guys can probably smell that vinegar, I expect. But over here, some different smells. Again, some instructions with this one. Just spray one of these tester strips, and you can stand here or you can go back to your seat, just grab some instructions, and there's a meditation based on that smell where we're going to try and experience God through smell. We're going to try and smell God this morning, all right? Over here, sorry, this is going to give everybody neck ache. Over here, we have a variety of blankets, and I also brought in my two boys' dressing gowns, but I washed them last night, okay? So just so you know, so they're very clean, but these are just the softest and most beautiful things. So what you're going to do is grab a blanket or a gown, and you can sit on the floor for this, or you can stand up. I would recommend sitting, and just wrap yourself in God's love. Okay, so we're going to feel God on us, and you can just sit down and rock back and forward if you like, you know, just go for it, but I do that on a regular basis, by the way. But just wrap yourself in this, and there's some instructions with this, a couple of scriptures you could meditate on. But imagine being enveloped in God's love. So instructions here, and just think of the times when we don't feel God's presence. Well, this is God present to us. This is God touching us. It's a very beautiful experience. So. That might be one you want to do for half an hour. I don't know, but there's an opportunity there, okay, to experience God's love that way. Now, another touch one, and I'm going to be doing this one over here, is foot washing, okay? So I will wash anybody's feet this morning I imagine that already has made you feel uncomfortable, okay? Because foot washing is uncomfortable in our culture. But if you're feeling burdened, heavy, just something, just you're not sure what it is, or maybe you do know what it is, but you feel like you need refreshment. You need this weight taken off your shoulders. I would just encourage you. And by the way, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to wash feet. And if you'd like to come over here and sit in the chair, I'll wash your feet. We have some nice clean water, some soap, and some towels, so we'll dry your feet as well. Okay, so you will experience the power of God's touch in the way that, you know, we just talked about with Jesus washing his disciples' feet. Over here, at this station, Melanie's going to be over at this station, and we have, similar to the smelling station over there, we have an aromatic oil here, and I would encourage you to come to this station to experience God's love if you need healing. The scriptures frequently challenge people to be anointed with oil in order to be healed. I mean, that's a sort of tradition in the Hebrew scriptures. It's also in the Christian scriptures. We're going to do that this morning. Now, again, we're not actually going to pray for anybody. We're not going to say anything. You can come up here, or Melanie will pronounce a blessing on you, but you don't have to say what the problem is, but she's going to put some oil on you, probably on your forehead, and that has a rich smell, and you can just go away and take that smell in and experience God's love and allow God's presence to be to impact you, and we believe that God heals people, and that obviously we can't guarantee anything, but if you need healing, this is a vehicle of healing, a vehicle of God's love. Okay, so you can just come and stand here. You don't need to explain anything. Manuel will pronounce a blessing and then put oil on you. Now, the final one it's not the final one, and there's no order to this, but I just wanted to explain this, and I'm sorry that this is right at the back. Okay, but we're going to do communion in a slightly different way this morning, and communion is just one of these stations, so there's no presentation. Well, this is it. This is the communion presentation. I'm going to come back to that. Let me tell you a little story so that you're not twisting your eyes. I've told this story once before, but we have a couple of bottles of wine back there, all right? And let me tell you now, those bottles of wine, each one costs about $100, okay? It's really good wine. Now, you're probably thinking, what a waste of money. You might be thinking that, how dare he spend that? Well, let me say, I bought that. That's not the church money. I bought that, and I don't have a lot of money, so I'm doing it because I think this is important for us. Let me explain why it's important. And also, you might be thinking, hang on a minute, even you could have given that money to the poor, right? Well, remember, let's look at that scripture, what it said about, maybe we can look at the John 12 one, where Jesus is anointed. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. So this is after Lazarus has come back to life. Then Mary took about a pint of nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. I mean, you can understand the objection. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put in it. That's a little bit of inside commentary from John there. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. And I think what Jesus is getting at here is, if you could understand what's going on here, if you could understand who I am, if you could understand the life you can access through me, it would change the world. It would change the situation of poverty around the world. It would change our lives forever. We would be agents of love, peace, and hope all over the place. If we could get hold of that, then all kinds of power, all kinds of generosity, all kinds of resource would be unleashed. Jesus was accused of wasting money. Jesus was accused of being a drunkard. He was accused of being a party animal. You know, he once said, hey, you know, you moaned at John the Baptist because John the Baptist didn't come eating and drinking, and now I've come eating and drinking, and you say I'm a drunkard and a glutton. All right? Jesus was a he lived his life, and he it seems that Jesus embraced life to the full. All right, Jesus turned water into wine, and the wine was good wine. Why? Because Jesus loves people. Because Jesus wants to bless people. Jesus wants to bless us. Now, I once had an experience. I think I've told this story before. This was, again, back in France on that same trip when I went to Champagne. I was in Paris with my wife and my brother and his fiance. And this was in the early 90s. And we went into this restaurant and we were just going to order the food. So my brother passed me the wine list and said, hey, you know, would you order some wine? So I said, sure, I'll order some wine. Now, this is back before the common currency in Europe, okay, before euros. So it was French francs. And unfortunately, we had been in Spain a couple of weeks before where it was Spanish pesetas, and the exchange rate for pesetas to the pound was 100 to 1. And the exchange rate for francs to pounds was just 10 to 1. And somehow, I'd got in my head that it was 100 to 1 in France. I just, you know, so I'm looking down the wine list, and there's a really nice bottle of wine for 1,000 francs. I mean, it's a Gevrey Chambertin. So I'm thinking, that's 10 pounds. And I knew wine was a lot cheaper in France than it is in England. So I'm thinking, oh, Tim, my brother said, we've got to buy that one. And he's paying for the meal, by the way. So, and he's in love. He's just got engaged. He's in love. You know. So I said, let's get one of those. So the wine comes out. And it was interesting. As soon as we ordered that wine, the demeanor of the waiter towards us changed completely. The French don't like the English very much. You know, so it's like, what do you want? You know, and then when I ordered this bottle of wine, it was, oh, and they brush down the table and they bring this thing out. I should have known when they blew the dust off the bottle of wine, something was up, but I didn't twig. And then we pour it. It was the most delicious wine I have ever tasted. Also the most expensive one I've ever tasted, but I didn't realize that. So there's four of us, you know, we're young and happy, and we polished off this bottle of wine. So my brother said, well, let's get another one. So I said, well, look, it's a great list. Let's choose something else. You know, so I got the list again. I'm going down there. And I see another fantastic bottle of wine for like 850 francs. So I'm thinking, that's £8.50. That's amazing. Then I suddenly think, no, it's not. It's not. How? That's crazy. It's $85. And then suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, that means the last one I ordered was £100, which I think the exchange rate back then, that was $160. So I just bought a $160 bottle of wine, and we couldn't send it back because we had drunk it already. But my brother, who was totally in love, said, oh, let's do it anyway. And he had a very good job at the time. And so we enjoyed these two fantastic bottles of wine. Now, I have never had a bottle of wine that good before that, never had a bottle of wine good since that. But there was something beautiful about that wine. And the reason is, it's not a snobbery thing. That's so much effort, so much work, so much love and attention, so much aging and technique goes into producing that wine. It produces something phenomenal, something beautiful, something that feels amazing, something that expresses really the love, I think, of God. I think that's why Jesus served wine to his followers he made an important point of equating wine with forgiveness, wine with experiencing God. Now, we usually do communion, and there's an opportunity to do communion the same way as we usually do it today. There's cups of grape juice and bread there, and we'll have people at the front here serving grape juice and bread as well. But you know, some people rightly should not drink the real wine, and that's totally okay. We want to be very sensitive to that, and nobody has to do this. But let me just say from my part that something about the little cups and the grape juice and the cube pieces of bread loses it for me. I'm just being honest about it, okay? The times of when we've had communion, or what I've experienced communion most fully, have been when when I've had a meal with people, and at some point in the meal or towards the end of the meal, we recognize that we're celebrating God's goodness, we're celebrating God's presence, we're celebrating community, and we break some bread and drink some wine and remember Jesus. And I think that if we're drinking in God's love, it should be an evocative experience. And I think there's something, absolutely not for everybody, but there's something powerful about drinking real wine. So we're going to do that, and we're going to have some real bread that's fresh out of the oven that you'll be able to smell, okay? So here's that communion station. You can come over here, take some bread, which is warm, okay? I can feel that warm. I can smell it now. Can you guys smell the bread there? I don't know whether you can smell that, but we'll break it open. So take a piece of bread, smell the bread, okay? Take a deep breath of that. And then the wine here, so there's a bottle of Gevrey Chambertin, which is a Burgundy wine. It's Pinot Noir grape, which is a very difficult grape to handle well. Has anybody had bad Pinot Noir? Anybody had bad Pinot Noir? Yeah, it's very easy to find bad Pinot Noir. This is a beautiful Pinot Noir, Gevrey Chambertin, and then Châteauneuf du Pape is the other one. Okay, so they're both French wines. Châteauneuf du Pape comes from the south of France. It's, you know, back in the 14th century, the Pope moved to Avignon, France, and for about 70 years, the Pope was based there, and he kind of promoted the wine culture around that area, and it resulted in this particular brand of wine called Châteauneuf du Pape, or Newcastle of the Pope. So that's what we have today. That has about 13 different varieties of grapes in it. So a lot of attention and love has gone into making this perfectly, or verging on perfectly balanced wine. Okay, so take some bread, and then, now, we only have two bottles, okay? And there's a lot of us in here, and I'm going to be watching. I'm over there at the foot. I'm over at the foot station, okay? I just want to emphasize, this is real wine. You may feel that that's not appropriate for you, and that's totally okay. It's totally okay. But if you would like to try some of it, just pour out a little bit, all right? And then you could, look. So we've only got these plastic cups. I'm sorry about that. But, you know, something like that, maybe a little bit more than that, okay? And you can look at it. You can just take in the smell, breathe it in, and then you can taste it. And that is really good. That is really good. Okay, and let it fills your mouth and taste it. What does it remind you of? And this, I haven't put, there's no tasting notes here, okay? So it is what it is to you, all right? This isn't an exercise in snobbery. This is just take it, taste it, let it, feel it. And here's the deal. You are worth it. All right, you are worth it. This is not grape juice. This is a $100 bottle of wine. And I think, actually, if Jesus was here today, that whole table would be full of this stuff. Okay, I honestly think that. Not that anybody would get drunk. We're not into getting drunk. We're just saying that I think there would be a celebration where we would drink in God's love and experience it and feel it in our